trial to test efficacy of mixing COVID-19 vaccines. Advice from a doc, how to prepare for your COVID-19 vaccination. Global COVID-19 vaccine confidence is rising, survey says. Epidemiologist compares COVID-19 variant to a Category 5 hurricane brewing off the U.S. coast. There are around 4,000 COVID-19 mutations, UK minister warns. Increasing data suggests UK variant may be deadlier, says CDC director. The U.S. may soon have its first standards for consumer face masks. Are they strict enough? Another 779,000 Americans filed for unemployment benefits last week as COVID-19 continues to slam the economy. Biden tells House Democrats to stick together in COVID-19 relief push. From the Texas Tribune, Texas tenants behind on rent will soon be able to seek aid from $1.3 billion assistance program. Nearly into a year of the pandemic, grocery workers in Texas are now more fatigued than ever as they await vaccine access. First, we'll take a look at the numbers. These numbers are from the Texas Health and Human Services Department. Ector County, confirmed cases, 7,219. Probable cases, 6,670. Fatalities, 298. Estimated active cases, 1,593. Estimated recovered, 11,998. Midland County, confirmed cases, 15,687. Fatalities, 215. Estimated active cases, 2,714. Estimated recovered, 12,758. The Odessa American in today's paper shows that ECISD daily cases now are 12 students and 6 staff. The Midland Reporter Telegram is reporting on MISD cases, and a short portion of this article reads, the district reported 294 confirmed cases during the month of January and 1,358 since the district started to keep track of cases in June. The spike in cases appeared to take place in November as there were 406 cases reported during the first 4 full weeks of the month. The number dropped to 333 in December and 279 in January. I also have another article that I want to read from the Midland Reporter Telegram, which gives some information about the vaccines. Midland on list of CVS sites administering vaccines. COVID-19 vaccines are coming to CVS pharmacies in Texas, but only 70 locations will roll them out starting February 11th. CVS Health announced the incoming vaccines are part of an 11-state rollout across approximately 335 CVS pharmacy locations, according to a Tuesday news release from CVS. Supply for the limited rollout in the state, which is sourced directly from the Federal Pharmacy Partnership Program, will be approximately 38,000 total doses. Participating CVS pharmacies are in communities throughout Texas, including Abilene, Amarillo, Beaumont, Brownsville, El Paso, Houston, Laredo, Lubbock, Midland, Plano, San Antonio, and Waco, the release noted. Vaccines at participating CVS pharmacy locations in Texas will be available to individuals meeting state criteria, the release noted. In Texas, frontline healthcare workers and residents at long-term care facilities, called Phase 1A, as well as people over 65 or over 16 with a chronic medical condition that puts them at increased risk for severe illness from COVID-19, called Phase B, are currently eligible to receive the COVID-19 vaccine. Patients must register in advance at CVS.com or through the CVS Pharmacy app, and people without online access can contact CVS customer service at 800-746-7287. Walk-in vaccinations without an appointment will not be provided. The list of specific stores will be available on CVS.com as stores receive shipments of vaccine and appointments become available. As more supply becomes available, the company will expand to more locations and offer additional appointments. Now let's read coronavirus briefs. Over the past week, new daily reported cases fell 16%, deaths declined 6%, and hospitalizations dropped 14.5%, according to data tracked by the Washington Post. U.S. surpasses 450,000 total deaths from COVID-19. We didn't read the state numbers, so let me go back and read those numbers provided by the Texas Tribune. All of these numbers are decreasing. Average new cases decreased in Texas by 504 cases compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On February 3rd, 13,181 new confirmed cases and 3,762 new probable cases were reported. Hospitalizations decreased by 1,968 patients compared with a week ago. As of February 3rd, 10,827 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. Average new deaths decreased by 29 deaths compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On February 3rd, 418 new deaths in Texas were reported. Now continuing with coronavirus briefs. Pfizer spent months working to extract a sixth vaccine dose from its vials, but the change collided with the fragilities of the U.S. medical supply chain and a shortage of equipment able to extract all six doses. Top infectious disease expert Anthony Fauci warned Americans to stay away from large Super Bowl parties and just lay low and cool it, warning on NBC's Today show that gatherings could expose people to the virus. Former CDC Director Tom Frieden also urged against gatherings. The Super Bowl doesn't have to be a super spreader event, he tweeted. It's too soon to dump masks, even for people who have been vaccinated, doctors say. A CDC ensemble forecast predicts there could be more than 530,000 U.S. COVID-19 deaths by February 27th, about one fatality for every minute of the pandemic. COVAX has announced its plan to distribute more than 330 million COVID-19 vaccine doses to developing nations in the first half of the year. Using rapid tests in schools can cut coronavirus infection by half, study finds. Now here are some articles. UK trial to test efficacy of mixing COVID-19 vaccines, from CNN's Christopher Rios. The United Kingdom is launching the world's first study examining whether different coronavirus vaccines can safely be used for two-dose regimens. Participants in the study will be given the vaccine in alternating doses. For example, Oxford AstraZeneca for the first dose and Pfizer BioNTech for the second. If we do show that these vaccines can be used interchangeably in the same schedule, this will greatly increase the flexibility of vaccine delivery and could provide a clue as to how to increase the breadth of protection against new virus strains, said Matthew Snape, chief investigator and associate professor in vaccinology at the University of Oxford. Enrollment in the UK government-funded study is currently underway and preliminary results are expected over the summer. The current vaccine dosing regimen for the general public will remain unchanged in the UK. But if the study shows promising results, the government may consider revising the recommended vaccine regimen. Nothing will be approved for use more widely than the study or as part of our vaccine deployment program until researchers and the regulator are absolutely confident the approach is safe and effective, said Minister of COVID-19 Vaccine Development, Nadim Zahawi. Currently, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the World Health Organization do not recommend interchanging coronavirus vaccines since there is no available data that examines whether doing so would still provide the same level of protection. Advice from a doc, how to prepare for your COVID-19 vaccination, from CNN's Katia Hedder. As more people around the world get access to the coronavirus vaccines, many questions remain. Will it work? Will there be side effects? Do I need to rest after I get the vaccine? Can I hang out with my friends and family now? CNN medical analyst Dr. Lena Nguyen, an emergency physician and visiting professor at George Washington University Milken Institute School of Public Health, says once you have secured your vaccine appointment, make sure you follow all instructions. Complete paperwork, if there is any, that you need to do in advance, she advises. Bring all required documentation, Some places ask for identification or proof of residency, so know what you will need and make sure you have it. When the day arrives to head to your appointment, Wynn says it's important that you wear a mask to minimize your exposure to coronavirus while waiting in line. Wynn says after you've received the first shot, you may have a bit of soreness in the location where you get injected. Many people have no symptoms beyond that. Some develop side effects in one or two categories. First, they could have soreness, redness, and swelling at the site of the injection. Second, they could have what we call systemic symptoms, meaning that they feel something throughout their body. They may develop headache, fever, fatigue, and muscle aches. These could last hours and usually go away after a day, she says. Global COVID-19 vaccine confidence is rising, survey shows, from CNN's Lauren Mascarenhas. Global vaccine confidence is rising, according to a new survey, showing that 54% of respondents across 15 countries would take a COVID-19 vaccine if one was offered to them. The survey by the Institute of Global Health Innovation at Imperial College in London revealed that by mid-January, willingness to get vaccinated increased in 11 of the 15 countries since November, when 41% of respondents said they would get vaccinated. Over half of those surveyed, 58%, believe government health authorities will deliver an effective COVID-19 vaccine, with the share of respondents who strongly agree increasing in 11 countries since November. Epidemiologist compares COVID-19 variant to a Category 5 hurricane brewing off the U.S. coast. From CNN's Adrian Vogt. Epidemiologist Michael Osterholm compared a U.K. coronavirus variant to a Category 5 hurricane churning off the coast, saying some strains could cause a major surge in new cases in the U.S. It's going to take much more than the vaccine to keep this variant at bay and not to have potentially a major surge in just the weeks ahead, said Osterholm, director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. A mutation that could allow COVID-19 to escape antibody protection has now been found in samples of a rapidly spreading strain in the UK, according to a report. Experts say it's too early to predict whether this development will impact the trajectory of COVID-19 around the world. I think amongst my colleagues, they would agree that this variant from the United Kingdom, which is now beginning to circulate much more widely in the United States, poses a huge challenge to us, and that in just a few weeks, we could be seeing case numbers increase very dramatically, Osterholm said on CNN's New Day. There are around 4,000 COVID-19 mutations, UK minister warns, from CNN's Amy Cassidy and Joe Shelley. There are approximately 4,000 mutations of COVID-19 in the world right now, according to the UK's vaccine minister, Nadim Zahawi. Speaking to Sky News on Thursday, Zahawi said researchers are tracking how the virus evolves, and Pfizer, BioNTech, Moderna, AstraZeneca are among the manufacturers working to improve their vaccines to make sure we are ready for any variant. He said, there are about 4,000 variants around the world of COVID now. We have the largest genome sequencing industry. We have about 50% of the world's genome sequencing industry, and we are keeping a library of all the variants so that we are ready to be able to respond, whether in the autumn or beyond, to any challenge the virus may present, and produce the next vaccine so we can always protect the United Kingdom and, of course, offer it to the rest of the world as well. Some context. Professor Ravi Gupta, professor of microbiology at the University of Cambridge, said UK vaccine minister was not referring to variants as we have come to know them. Rather, he is referring to individual mutations, Gupta said, noting that many mutations emerge and disappear continuously. Scientists are using variants to describe viruses with mutations that are transmitting in the general population. There are not 4,000 of those. Scientists are not surprised to see the coronavirus evolving, but new variants first identified in the UK, Brazil, and South Africa are worrisome as they appear more transmissible. Increasing data suggests UK variant may be deadlier, says CDC director. From CNN's Andrea Diaz. Health authorities are still learning about the new coronavirus variants and whether current health measures are as effective against them. But data suggests that the B117 variant, first identified in the UK, may be deadlier than the original strand. We know that some of the variants have increased transmissibility. There's increasing data that suggests that some of the variants, the B117 variant, may actually lead to increased mortality. And the jury's still out with regard to how these vaccines are going to work with either of these variants, said Dr. Rochelle Walensky, director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, on MSNBC Wednesday. We'd have to follow the science, and we are learning more and more about whether our public health measures, our mitigation measures, our mask wearing, our distancing, will be fully effective against these variants, but we have every reason to believe that they will. Walensky added that as authorities examine more people infected by the variants, they are finding that those people are typically not wearing masks or social distancing. What we know is that the variants probably will be less forgiving when we don't follow that guidance, she said. The U.S. may soon have its first standards for consumer face masks. Are they strict enough? From CNN's Carrie Enriquez. American consumers may be about to get the first standards for face masks. The coronavirus pandemic triggered a sudden increase, intense need for masks that had many designing makeshift masks from t-shirts and bandanas. Hundreds of new and untested products flooded the marketplace with almost no oversight or regulation. But the Wild West of personal protection equipment is set to change. ASTM International, an international technical standards organization, and the National Personal Protective Technology Laboratory are working on standards to establish minimum design, performance, testing, labeling, user instruction, reporting, and classification, and conformity assessment requirements for barrier face coverings. The hope is that Americans will have guidance as to which masks actually work. Currently in draft phase, it will go for review Wednesday by the ASTM International and its subcommittee on respiratory hazards, which includes representatives from academia, industry stakeholders, government agencies, and independent participants. Another 779,000 Americans filed for unemployment benefits last week as COVID-19 continues to slam economy. From CNN's Anna Kontapp. Another 779,000 Americans filed for first-time unemployment benefits on a seasonally adjusted basis in the last week of January, the Labor Department said Thursday, stressing once again that the jobs recovery isn't in great shape. Still, it was a sizable decrease in claims from the prior week. Last week's claims figure was 812,000, still several times the number during the same period last year before the pandemic brought the nation to a standstill. On top of regular jobless benefits, 348,912 workers filed for pandemic unemployment assistance, which is available for people such as the self-employed or gig workers. Added together, 1.2 million workers filed first-time claims for benefits without adjusting for seasonal swings. Continued claims, which count people who have filed for at least two consecutive weeks of aid, stood at 4.6 million. January wasn't a great month for the jobs recovery, and Friday's jobs report for the month isn't expected to bring much better news. While economists predict 50,000 jobs were added last month, a reversal from the staggering loss in December, the unemployment rate is expected to stay flat at 6.7%. It hasn't budged since November. Biden tells House Democrats to stick together in COVID-19 relief push. From CNN's Manu Raju. President Joe Biden told House Democrats on a conference call Wednesday he is open to narrowing the distribution of $1,400 stimulus checks in his COVID-19 relief proposal to focus on poor and middle-class people, according to audio of the call obtained by CNN. "I think we can better target the number," he said, according to the recording. In the call, Biden also warned his party about the dangers of engaging in intra-party battles, contending their strength is in their unity with narrow majorities in both the House and the Senate. We hold a small majority in the House and the barest majorities in the Senate, and we're going to succeed or fail together, Biden said. There have been three Democratic presidents in 28 years. Each one faced a tough midterm loss that cost a lot. It happened in 94 and it happened in 2010. We don't want to let that happen here, so let's stick together. Stimulus checks. Biden made clear he wasn't willingly to dramatically drop the $1.9 trillion price tag for his plan, but also said he's willing to make the stimulus checks more narrowly targeted. Biden told House Democrats the additional $1,400 stimulus checks are a key component of the White House package, saying of the checks, people need it, and frankly, they've been promised it. I think we can better target the number. I'm okay with that, Biden said of the distribution of stimulus checks. But I'm not going to start my administration by breaking a promise to the American people. Now from the Texas Tribune. Texas tenants behind on rent will soon be able to seek aid from $1.3 billion assistance program by Juan Pablo Garnham. State officials plan to roll out a $1.3 billion rental assistance program for Texans struggling to keep up with housing payments during a shaky economic recovery from the coronavirus pandemic. The new program comes after a separate state initiative was criticized for its limited scope and because many landlords declined to participate. More than 1.6 million Texans had little or no confidence in being able to pay next month's rent, according to a January survey by the U.S. Census Bureau. Assistance for the new program will only be available to households that make no more than 80% of the area's median income, which varies by county and by number of members in a household. In 2020, for example, the threshold for a family of four in the Houston area was around $63,000. The new program, which is expected to start in 2 weeks, will help with up to 15 months of rent, both for past or future payments, according to the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs. Around 80,000 households will be able to receive assistance. Both landlords and tenants will be able to apply. Once the program is running, the payments could take up to 2 weeks to reach the tenants or landlords if the paperwork is filed correctly, said Brooke Boston, Deputy Executive Director of Programs at the agency. TDHCA will be providing updates on how to apply in the upcoming weeks through their website and a mailing list. Their website is, by the way, tdhca.state.tx.us/texans.htm. The program comes after renters have spent months depending on local funds and nonprofit organizations for rental assistance. Many of those programs were quickly depleted. In October, the state created a separate pilot program for assistance in 19 counties. The initiative, called the Eviction Diversion Program, has been available for tenants in specific county courts when they were going through the eviction process. To get the funds, landlords would have to agree to participate in the initiative in front of the Justice of Peace, of the Peace. My general impression is that it is not working very well, and that's primarily because landlords are not interested in participating in the program, said Matt Garcia, staff attorney for Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid, last week. Oftentimes, the Justice of the Peace asks both parties if they are interested, and landlords don't want to, and it ends the conversation there. The program dedicated $3.3 million to pay up to 6 months of rent for tenants. As of December 31st, it had distributed $1.3 million among 235 households across the state, although TDHCA officials say that most funds are already committed by now. Since the first round has been mostly depleted, TDHCA has already announced a second round of more than $36 million in rental assistance that will be distributed through 45 cities and counties. Housing advocates not only criticized this limited coverage, but also that the first round of funds required the landlord's approval. Garcia said that out of all his eviction cases, no tenants have been able to receive funds. And I do this full time, he said. TDHCA now hopes to provide help before eviction proceedings begin. It was kind of a last-minute Hail Mary to help somebody out, but it's better to get rental assistance early on, said Bobby Wilkinson, executive director of TDHCA. We hope to catch as many people as possible before they ever get to that stage with our new statewide rental assistance program, but we're going to keep some of that money for the people that fall through the cracks. According to the U.S. Treasury Department, which is providing funds for the new program, it only applies to rental units and tenants have to show that they have qualified for unemployment benefits or experienced financial hardships due to COVID-19. Applicants also have to demonstrate that they are in risk of experiencing homelessness or housing instability. It does sound promising, said David Mintz, Vice President of Government Affairs for the Texas Apartment Association, which represents landlords across the state. We are hopeful that this is going to help fill part of the need that is out there. Housing advocates, which have warned about the challenges of previous programs, also cheered the creation of the new program. I think it's fantastic. We are finally getting a rental assistance program to the scale and the magnitude of the crisis, said Eli Barish, policy analyst at the housing advocacy organization, Texas Housers. The biggest issue of the previous program is that there was so little money. We finally have something that is equal to the task. TDHCA will centralize the application process through a website and a call center. One concern is that high demand could overwhelm the call center and website, like what has happened with unemployment benefits throughout the pandemic. Bobby Wilkerson from the TDHCA said that the agency is working to be ready and that the call center will have a capacity of a few hundred workers. I would say to tenants, be patient. Help is coming. Work with your landlords. And to landlords, I would say, don't file evictions. Work with your tenant and apply for this new source of money to make yourself full, Wilkinson said. You'll get some back rent and some rent looking forward. This is going to be a good tool to help everybody. Advocates, though, still worry about renters who don't have reliable internet access. There needs to be ways to access the program other than the online portal because of the digital divide. We also need it to be language accessible, Barish said. It's incredibly important that this happens quickly. TDHCA spokeswoman Christina Terloni said people without internet access can also apply over the phone. For those with technological challenges, call center staff will be available via phone to help with the application process, she said in an email. Information about how to apply and who is eligible will be available in Spanish, and the agency is looking to provide it in other languages like Mandarin and Vietnamese. Terloni said TDHCA will also advertise the program and work with organizations like the Texas Affiliation of Affordable Housing Providers to get the word out to potential beneficiaries. But it is still not clear if the website will be fully translated. The agency said they are still working on such details with their vendor. Translation services also will be available for people who speak other languages through the call center. Terloni said that the agency will gather racial and income data that would allow them to evaluate the program's reach. But Barish is concerned that Black and Latino Texans will face a difficult time accessing the program, just as they have experienced challenges accessing vaccines. We need to make sure the same doesn't happen with rent relief, Barish said. We may run just a couple of minutes over, but I'm going to get into this last story, also from the Texas Tribune. Nearly a year into the pandemic, grocery workers in Texas are more fatigued than ever as they await vaccine access, by Duncan Agnew. In the middle of a recent shift at Kroger in Cedar Hill, Jackie Ryan was assisting customers with self-checkout when an elderly woman asked for help finding canned pumpkin. While Ryan pointed her in the right direction, the woman mentioned that she had been feeling sick. After Ryan helped her and her son pay for their groceries, the woman suddenly collapsed. Ryan quickly dialed 911, and a team of EMTs arrived to take the woman to the hospital. While overhearing the first responders question the woman, Ryan discovered that she had been sick for over 2 months and received a COVID-19 test earlier the same day. Ryan didn't know the results of the test, But concerned about potential exposure to the virus, she asked her manager if she needed to quarantine or take time off work. "If you don't get any symptoms, then it's fine," the manager replied. April Martin, the corporate affairs manager for the Kroger Dallas division, said that Kroger has complied with all health and safety regulations when identifying positive cases among store employees. Nearly a year into the pandemic, Ryan's experience that day reflects the challenges that grocery store workers across Texas are facing in their stores every day. For months, workers have risked their health to help keep shorthanded grocery stores open, all while dealing with increased hours and customers refusing to wear masks. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices urged states to include frontline essential workers in Phase 1B of vaccine allocation, but Texas decided not to include any essential employees, like grocery store workers, in the state's current vaccine priority groups. Without any guarantee of vaccine prioritization, grocery workers now find themselves overwhelmed and continually exposed to the virus with no end in sight. "It's kind of a big mess," Ryan said. "That's what it feels like. It feels like a big mess, and it feels like there's no right answer." Martin said the grocery store company, like several American businesses that had to swiftly alter how they operate in a pandemic, has spent more than $1 billion to provide safeguards against the virus and give employees bonuses, paid leave, and wage premiums, among other things. "Our dedicated associates have gone above and beyond to serve our customers and communities during one of our most challenging times in the nation's history, and we're committed to providing the resources and support to keep them and their families safe as they continue their remarkable effort," she said. Back in April, when people made a rush for essential supplies like toilet paper and soap, Governor Greg Abbott tweeted a message of support for grocery store workers, saying that "everyone across our state appreciates your hard work to help Texans respond to the coronavirus." Since then, workers say they have felt forgotten and abandoned by the state government. In December, the Texas Expert Vaccine Allocation Panel, in charge of designating each population currently eligible to receive vaccinations, decided against including frontline essential workers in Phase 1B. The Department of State Health Services said that the panel wanted to reserve vaccine doses for those at the highest risk of death, which includes people over 65 and anyone over 16 with a chronic medical condition that puts them at higher risk. At least 8 million Texans currently qualify for Phase 1A or 1B of vaccine allocation, but the state has received fewer than 4 million doses thus far. The panel is currently considering potential priority groups for Phase 1C of vaccine rollout, and its decision will depend on epidemiological data about virus transmission, according to DSHS Director of Media Relations Chris Van Dusen. However, at least 11 states and the District of Columbia followed CDC recommendations by deciding to put frontline essential workers, including grocery store employees, in their latest rounds of vaccine allocation, according to the Washington Post. New York allowed grocery workers to start getting the vaccine last month. Arkansas has also started vaccinating teachers and educators in the first round of essential workers to receive doses, and the state plans to expand distribution to other essential workers later this month. "You feel like you don't matter when your own state goes against every recommendation that there is out there," said Don Hand, who works at a Kroger in Houston. "Why don't we matter? What's your answer to that?" While 17.7% of the total Texas population is uninsured, 24% of grocery workers in 11 Texas cities have no health insurance, according to an Associated Press analysis of census data. The pandemic has disproportionately impacted people of color in Texas, and COVID-19 is deadlier for black and brown people in the state. Black and Hispanic Texans have also faced more obstacles than white people in accessing the vaccine. Hispanic Texans make up 46% of grocery store workers in the 11 analyzed Texas cities and just over 39% of the Texas population. Black Texans make up more than 17% of grocery store employees in those cities, compared to just under 12% of the state's population. The AP compiled information from the U.S. Census Bureau on cities with the largest populations of frontline workers to estimate the proportion of such employees in different demographic groups in 100 cities across the country. The Tribune analyzed the data on the 11 Texas cities in that list: Amarillo, Arlington, Austin, Corpus Christi, Dallas, El Paso, Fort Worth, Houston, Irving, Lubbock, and San Antonio. In early January, State Representative Vicki Goodwin, Democrat Austin, spearheaded a letter from 10 state representatives to Abbott and Dr. John Hellerstadt, the DSHS commissioner, asking for essential workers like teachers and grocery store employees to be given vaccine priority. Goodwin argued that such workers should receive the vaccine as soon as possible because they are risking their lives every day to keep Texans healthy and safe. Goodwin told the Texas Tribune that she wants grocery store workers prioritized in the next phase of distribution, although she understands that the panel's decisions remain extremely difficult. "I wasn't aware that other states had added grocery store workers to Phase 1B, and I think maybe it's something to point out to the EVAP committee and see if they would reconsider adding grocery store workers to Phase 1B," Goodwin said. In a rare move, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick also sent a letter to Imelda Garcia, chair of the EVAP, requesting changes to the vaccine rollout plan to make distribution more efficient and effective. Patrick specifically asked for teachers to be prioritized, but he did not mention grocery store workers. Patrick's office did not respond to a request for comment, and Garcia declined an interview request from the Tribune. Even well over a month after vaccines received federal approval, Texas continues to see dangerously high levels of COVID-19 cases and deaths. Just last week, three other workers at her Kroger location tested positive for the coronavirus, Hand said. According to one study from the journal Occupational and Environmental Medicine, grocery store workers who interact with customers are five times more likely to contract the virus than employees in other positions. "You got to scramble to fill their schedule, and a lot of people, they're tired. They don't want to do it," Han said. "It sucks. It really sucks. What can you do? We just have to get up every morning and push on, and that's all we can do to ensure that the community that we care about gets fed." To make matters worse, grocery store workers also frequently find themselves in the middle of fights over mask mandates and safety protocols in their stores. Despite a requirement for all customers and employees to wear masks at Kroger, both Hand and Ryan said they see people come into the store without masks every day. In fact, multiple members of United Food and Commercial Workers Local 1000 have been fired for excessive confrontations with customers who refuse to wear a mask in their stores, Union President Ricky Burris said in his January 2021 membership update. Martin, the Kroger corporate affairs manager, said the store provided tips for de-escalation to help employees interact with customers frustrated about the mask mandate. Still, workers have felt powerless to say anything to those customers, according to Ryan and Hand. "The people that I work with, we just do our jobs," Ryan said. "We have people come into the store daily who do not have face masks on, and nobody says anything to them. We just don't. The managers don't say anything to them. The associates don't say anything to them, because we know the risks of asking someone to put a face mask on or to leave the store. So we just don't." Hand and Ryan said workers don't always have enough time to properly sanitize different parts of the store, and managers have failed to communicate clearly the protocol that employees have to follow when one tests positive. Because most people remain desperate for work during a pandemic-related recession, workers often avoid reporting symptoms or following procedures because they need the money. A lot of employees are not going to step forward and say, "I need to quarantine. I need to get tested," Ryan said. "There's no benefit to getting tested. You're going to lose hours. You're going to lose work time. You're potentially not going to get paid for choosing to take the safe route." Facing such difficult situations and virus exposure every day, grocery store workers desperately need additional support to maintain their mental health and well-being, Ryan added. Last year, Kroger offered 6 free counseling sessions to all employees, but it's unclear if the company will provide the same opportunity again in 2021. The crazy thing is, I've never in my life called my store and said I need a mental health day, but I literally did it last week when that lady fell out at my register, Ryan said. With so much tension at work and little support from the state or from their employers, many grocery workers still see the vaccine as their last hope for better months ahead, although they recognize the need for high-risk and elderly individuals to receive vaccine priority as well. They also point out that they will continue to expose their families at home until they receive protection by being vaccinated. Our seniors need it, and my God, if my son had cancer, God forbid, I'd want him to get the vaccine, and I'd want him to get it before me, Han said. So I try to look at it as if it was my family. I would really, really prefer them to get it before me. But then I'm the one that's exposing them. So on that same side of the coin, I need it too. And on one final note that's related to the previous story, I'm going to read just a small portion of an article written for the business section of the Washington Post that was published yesterday. Kroger is closing stores rather than giving workers an extra $4 in pandemic hero pay. By Paulina Ferozzi. Two grocery stores in Southern California will shutter in April in response to a local hero pay measure, requiring a $4 an hour increase for grocery workers during the pandemic. Kroger, which owns more than a dozen grocery chains, announced this week that it would close a pair of Long Beach stores, a Ralph's and a Food for Less, specifically citing the ordinance the city's mayor signed into law late last month. The city was the first in the state to introduce a measure requiring some grocery retailers give workers a temporary hourly pay bump during the pandemic. The irreparable harm that will come to employees and local citizens is a direct result of the city of Long Beach's attempt to pick winners and losers, the company said in a statement, calling it deeply unfortunate. Kroger's move to close the stores comes amid growing momentum for similar hazard pay policies in cities across the state as well as elsewhere in the country. Officials in two other cities, the Oakland City Council and the Los Angeles City Council, voted unanimously on Tuesday to mandate temporary $5 per hour increases for some grocery workers. The Long Beach policy is in place for 120 days and includes groceries that sell at least 70% food products and employ more than 300 people nationally with at least 15 employees per store. Under those terms, it may exclude retailers like Target and Walmart. And again, this article goes on, but that's just a very short article to give you more context on the grocery store workers and the industry's plight during this pandemic. And that is your coronavirus update for this Thursday, February 4th, 2021, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael, and coming up at 2 o'clock, we'll be bringing you USA Today with National News. And then at 3, it's our local news broadcast. Here are a few of the articles that we'll be bringing you. From the Midland Reporter Telegram, drop in crashes. Midland traffic down 20% in 2020. Motran says drop in traffic volume and other statistics likely to be short-term. Coronavirus. MISD experiences some drop-off in COVID cases. Energy. Study reports New Mexico could lose billions under federal oil and gas leasing ban. From the Odessa American. OHS and Permian reveal all state musicians. Getting the job done. City worker helps in many ways. And former Odessan helps design the new White House logo. Those articles and more at 3 o'clock. At 6, more national news from the Wall Street Journal. And at 7, Texas Monthly Archives. This week's program will feature, because it is Super Bowl weekend, it will feature articles related to football. Those will include articles about the Dallas Cowboys and specifically Tom Landry. We did a previous reading of a Tom Landry article last year, which was written in the 1970s. This article is a later story that was written about Tom Landry. And we'll have other later articles that are written about the Dallas Cowboys as well. That's coming up at 7 on Texas Monthly Archives. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow at 1. Be safe and have a great day.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 59 and clear. Tonight, it will be cloudy with a low in the mid-40s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is made available to the IAAIS program share and was recorded at the audio reading service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Healthy Life, and I'm your reader, Tony Ray, with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from the Health Magazine, and I'll begin with an article by Camille Noel Pagan, Your Best Defense. When it comes to your body's ability to fight off germs, your habits matter. A lot. Learn what you can do to optimize your immune system all year long. Understanding how your immune system works is the first step in helping it carry out its duties. This is always important, but perhaps never more so than now, with cold and flu season coinciding with COVID-19 pandemic. Your everyday choices have an impact on how your immune system functions, says rheumatologist Jane Buckner, MD, president of the Benaroya Research Institute at the Virginia Mason in Seattle. And, intriguingly, many of these decisions will play a role in your health several decades from now, too. Let's start with the basics. Your immune system is a complex network made up of your thymus, spleen, lymph nodes, bone marrow, white blood cells, antibodies, and skin. Its mission is to shield you from infection, fight off diseases, and help you heal from illnesses and wounds, says Dr. Buckner. But if your immune system is weakened or too strong, you're more vulnerable to illnesses and ailments and less able to battle them once they get a foothold. Ever wonder why some people seem to always be coming down with a bug while others emerge from a room full of runny-nosed toddlers unscathed? Scientists are still working to understand all of the factors, says Emily Herman, Ph.D., assistant professor and microbial infection and immunity at the Ohio State University College of Medicine. But there is a genetic basis for how susceptible someone is to infection. Age also matters. As we get older, our immune system produces fewer lymphocytes, white blood cells that fight off bacteria, viruses, cancer cells. Our lymphocytes stop functioning as effectively too. Still, other factors play a part, says Dr. Buckner, such as hygiene, like how often you wash your hands, and the quality of your microbiome, that is, the diversity of the microorganisms living inside your body. You'd think that having a supercharged immune system response would be akin to having a superpower, but in this case, too much is not a good thing. If your immune system becomes overzealous, it can injure your body, says Buckner. For example, with COVID-19, some people's immunity systems overreact for reasons we don't yet understand and create a cytokine storm. A cytokine storm is a severe immune response that causes the release of too many cytokines, proteins that can harm other cells and tissues too quickly, leading to severe illness or even death. An overactive immune system also contributes to the development of the autoimmune conditions such as rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, type 1 diabetes. With these conditions, the body literally attacks itself. Researchers are trying to figure out why this happens. In addition to gene variations that increase the odds, women are 4 times more likely than men to develop an autoimmune disorder. Environmental factors like air pollution might also raise a person's risk. I often have to explain to patients that it's not their fault they developed an autoimmune disorder, says Buckner. If you do have one, your immune system is frequently so busy fighting your own body that you may be more susceptible to outside infections. For that reason, it's extra essential to take steps to support your overall health. You probably heard about boosting your immune system, but balancing it should be actually your goal, experts say. You want enough of a response to fight back against invaders, but not so much that cytokines and other immunological responses cause harm, for example, a too high fever that leads to hearing loss. In fact, the only boost you should be aiming for is from vaccinations, which introduce your body to just enough of a germ to prompt the immune system to create antibodies to battle the disease it causes. Even if you don't become 100% immune, for example, when you receive a flu shot with one strain of influenza, then come into contact with another strain, your body may fight back more effectively, and you might get less sick. That's why it's so important to get your flu shot, even this late in the season, and to get vaccinated for COVID-19, if and when a vaccine becomes available. Just how do you create a balanced immune system? We know nutrition has a measurable impact on immunity, says Alka Gupta, MD, co-director of Integrative Health and Well-Being at Weill Cornell Medicine and New York Presbyterian. There's a long list of micronutrients that help, but vitamin C and B vitamins, including folic acid, selenium, zinc, are particularly beneficial, and you can get all of them from a diet full of fruits and vegetables and whole grains. If you like to supplement, Dr. Gupta advises taking a multivitamin. And some research shows that increasing zinc and vitamin C, or one of those two, at the onset of a cold may help reduce its duration. Vitamin D is crucial too, as it regulates immune response. This may be why low levels have been linked to severe COVID-19 symptoms. If blood tests show you're deficient in D, or you live somewhere like Seattle or Minnesota where you don't get much D stimulation sunlight for part of the year, ask your doctor about a daily supplement. No surprise, keeping stress in check is key. A little stress can improve immune function. Your body senses a threat and it ups the antibody count temporarily to compensate. But chronic stress leads to a drop in antibody levels and can weaken resistance to infection. The good news? So many of the habits that ease stress also have a positive aspect on your immune function, says Dr. Gupta. Exercising for at least 30 minutes daily, for example, has been shown to improve activity in the white blood cells that scavenge for bacteria and viruses. It also eases inflammation related to short-term illnesses as well as chronic autoimmune conditions. Just don't overdo it. Working out for more than an hour at a time or multiple times a day can lead to a drop in levels of a type of antibody called immunoglobulin. It may be tempting to reach for wine when you need to relax, but if you do, stick to one glass. Excess alcohol can depress your immune system, says Gupta. And not to sound too much like your mother, but hit the hay at a reasonable hour. Research consistently shows that getting too little sleep or not enough good quality sleep makes you more likely to get sick when exposed to a virus. It impacts your recovery too. Studies even show that getting restful shut-eye after a vaccine makes vaccinations more effective. Still need convincing to catch up on those Z's? Research suggests quality sleep helps T cells, which are responsible for killing viruses and cancer cells, to do their work better. Along those same lines, what's the deal with herd immunity? The term herd immunity has been thrown around a lot lately. It means that enough people in a community become immune to a virus or disease that it stops spreading. It doesn't mean the virus or disease is completely eradicated, but instead that there aren't big outbreaks anymore. Herd immunity can develop when enough people get sick, but not in every case, and possibly not with COVID-19. Some people who contract the virus don't seem to develop high antibody levels, which make them immune from getting the virus again, at least for a while. So we don't know if herd immunity through exposure is possible. The ideal way to create herd immunity is with vaccines. Without vaccines, researching herd immunity can kill a lot of people. Even so, vaccinations Even so, vaccination isn't always a one-step safeguard. It's important to get the flu shot every year, for example, because the virus mutates over time. That immune booster protects you and your community, including your kids and elderly parents, people with compromised immune systems, and anyone else who's at risk. Who's full of the beans? Just going to give you a short little thought on, with a pot of beans in the fridge, you're well on your way to a satisfying meal. Serve them on your own with rice or other grain and toss them into salads or tuck them into tacos or burritos or use them in one or whatever kind of recipe you'd like. So, Cantonelli, white bean, large lima, navy, and garbanzo are considered creamy and mild. A red kidney, a black-eyed pea, and a red and a cranberry are considered firm and earthy. Dried versus canned? Canned are just dried beans that have been cooked. Dried beans are a better value. A big bag yields much more than a single can and costs about the same or less. Also, dried beans retain their texture and density better. Canned beans are sometimes mushy and overly salty. How to soak? Soaking softens the outer skin of a bean and shortens the overall cooking time. It's not essential, but it does help moving along more quickly, and it's especially helpful if the beans are old. Slow method. Cook beans overnight, that's 8 hours, in enough water to cover by a few inches. Quick method. Put beans in a pot and add enough cold water to cover by a few inches and bring to boil. Boil 2 minutes and then remove from heat and let soak, cover for an hour. So, get some beans today. The long game. It's true that some of our cognitive skills peak in our 20s, say, remembering where you left your car keys, but new science is revealing other empowering ways our minds sharpen over time. This story is by Kimberly Hiss. For many years, neuroscience got aging all wrong. Researchers used to assume adulthood was boring. You had cognitive development until about 18, and then you had cognitive decline late in life, and that was the story, says Joshua Hartshore, PhD, assistant professor of psychology and neuroscience at Boston College. But with advances in neuroimaging and autopsy exams, as well as online studies that can reach unprecedented example sizes, researchers have begun chipping away at old theories. We've been seeing glimmers that more complicated things are happening in the brain throughout the lifespan, Hartshorne says. It turns out we have cognitive abilities that actually improve over time, and appreciating those strengths is important, says Elizabeth Kenzinger, PhD, professor of psychology and neuroscience at Boston College. Negative stereotypes absolutely cause us to underestimate the power of our brains as we age, she explains. Here are 7 ways we get better with age. You can see the forest for the trees. Number 1. While younger brains excel at noticing details, older brains take in the big picture. We shift in processing information in a more conceptual way. This is in part thanks to the hippocampus, because it gets better at a process known as pattern completion, which entails overlapping similar memories from the past. When your brain groups like experiences together, you're better able to distill their gist and thus derive meaning from them. For example, say you get cut off on a winding stretch of highway. If you were a teenager, you'd likely zero in and make the model of the speeding car. But today, you might connect the incident with a memory of another near miss on the same road and make a mental note to be extra careful on that route. This pattern completion process helps us apply something we learned in a prior context to the now. It's what we think of as wisdom. Here's the second one. You have a knack for reading people. Researchers use the term emotion perception to describe our capacity to pick up others' feelings. To measure the skill across age groups, Harshorn and his colleagues designed an online study in which participants viewed photographs of eyes and tried to identify the emotions they portrayed. What he learned? Our emotion perception seems to peak later than other cognitive abilities and remains sharp well into the 60s. Emotional perception is really